And now, from Greater Santon and beyond, get ready for the Santon Times Hour
with your host,
Alexander.
Oh, that's a quick one this week. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone in between and beyond, welcome to the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and also available on all good leading digital audio channels. Gosh, that's a mouthful. I'm Alexander Leipner, and this is edition 154. It's week 17 of 2024, in case you weren't too sure. And if you'd like to get in touch, you can always do so by using one of multiple channels to provide your questions, your comments, your feedback, your input. You can email editor at santontimes.co.za. You can connect on social media at santontimes if you're on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, X, LinkedIn. What else have we got? I'm sure there's something else. I can't think of it now. You can also go onto the website, santontimes.co.za. And if you're listening live on Mix 93.8 and not at a later stage, i.e. digitally online, you can use the WhatsApp line during this hour. It's 0848220938. That's 0848220938. And send through your questions and comments, your feedback, your thoughts, your emojis. Some people just send emojis, like paintings of ancient times where we have to decipher what it is that they're trying to say. Let me extend a very special welcome to you if you're listening for the very first time, as well as those people who listen every single week, those loyal listeners, that community that we've built up over the last couple of months. Welcome to you. Welcome to the Santon Times Hour Nation in Johannesburg and Pretoria, across South Africa and everywhere else in the world. They're listening online and on air. And as always, I'm happy to report that all is well in Santon Land, Africa's richest square mile, and a bit extra. And behind the desk again, Vincenzo, looking after all things audio. It's good to see you again. And yes, I'm back from Hong Kong. I took a bit of a trip to Hong Kong, a bit of a whistle-stop trip to Hong Kong, and went there on Cathay Pacific to the Hong Kong Sevens. If you're big into rugby, you know the Hong Kong Sevens. But let me tell you, I had no idea what I was in for. It was a very last-minute plan to go, and what an experience this was. And as you know, I'm always happy to share, and I'll be doing a little bit more of an extensive report back on my trip to Hong Kong. You know, you go in there with certain expectations and think it's going to be great. And then you actually go and you actually realize, wow, this is actually really fantastic. And I had the most absolutely brilliant time. I had some great travel pals who went with me, people I didn't know when I left. And we came back comrades in Hong Kong. We're now sort of bonded based on our experiences and just the most remarkable stuff. But I'm not going to go into too much now because, like I said, there's a whole episode that we can dedicate to chatting about Hong Kong and the experiences there. Earth Day this week, as well as Freedom Day, which is a public holiday, but I see it falls on a Saturday, so I don't know if that's really going to count all too much, but at least we recognize Freedom Day as we count down to this year's elections in May. And then Earth Day, is that the one where they switch off all the lights, Vincenzo? Have I got that right? Or is that a different day? Can't keep up. Can't keep up. But at least the e-tolls are scrapped, I see. There was big, big hoo-ha about the e-tolls being scrapped. I mean, I thought they'd been scrapped a long time ago, but did they have a countdown? Did I see the Premier having a countdown or someone having a countdown on the highway? I thought it was the most bizarre thing, like a New Year's Eve gathering. Oh, gosh, the things we'll do before elections, let me tell you. All right, what are we talking about this week? Joining me in just a bit is another media colleague, and we'll be looking at how media is funded in South Africa and the challenges currently facing journalists to bring you accurate news. And this has been something that's been boiling in the background for many years. I mean, this is not anything new. Most of the new digital platforms, I think, are an evolution of the challenges faced by mainstream media. And we can have a discussion about what's mainstream media and what isn't mainstream media and blah, blah, blah. But if you're in this industry, this is a very interesting topic. If you're not in the industry, well, you might find this to be a very interesting topic in itself because I think it affects you. So it should be an interesting discussion. And then there's a new award-winning play that's heading to Santon this week. And I'm going to get you the full story as I chat to one of the cast members and also a cornerstone of this particular theatrical performance. And finally, he won the Best Newcomer Award at the Comics Choice Awards. And I'll be chatting to him as well, all the way from Cape Town. So all of this and more is coming up in the next hour. But it's time for a bit of music, as we always do when we kick off the show. And Vincenzo, you got a little something for us? Something you've curated while I've been away? Oh, you even brought your saxophone along. That's very good. Well, you get that warmed up. And we've got Deep End, Last Call, and Natty Rico with California Dreaming. And then Vincenzo, you're going to play a little bit of sax in the background there. Okay, all right. Well, we'll have a listen. You switched on to the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8.
Promote your brand. Advertise your business.
Our audience could be your next client. Contact the Santon Times today.
Africa's premium financial event is back. Join us at the Santon Convention Center from 20 to 22nd of May and access the latest innovations and insights from across the globe right here in Santon. Gain insights from industry experts on navigating the markets through immersive learning and education. Don't miss out on this exclusive opportunity to invest in your future. Register today at events.financemagnates.com and claim your free ticket.
The best of Santon and beyond.
You're listening to the Santon Times Hour.
This is the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and also available on all good digital audio platforms wherever you are in the world. Feel free to subscribe and follow and get your weekly dose of the Santon Times Hour. As we get the week going, or the hour going for this week, I'm thrilled to be having a conversation which is very industry related. So if you're in media and journalism, this is going to be particularly fascinating. And if you're not, well, I think it's going to be very interesting as well. This past week, the Daily Maverick decided to shut down its website on the 15th of April in, protest in terms of what's happening with journalism, or in terms of highlighting some of the issues in journalism. Here to chat to me about this is Ray Mahlaka. He is a journalist with the Daily Maverick. And Ray, it's good to have you on the Santon Times Hour.
Thanks, Alex, for having me.
Well, I found this entire move very interesting because I've always held the Daily Maverick as a pioneer when it comes to digital media, breaking away from where traditional media was going. And as a bit of a precursor to this conversation, I've had the pleasure of working in traditional media for 25 years. I've sat on both sides of the table, both on the management side and on the editorial side, and feel like I have a good understanding of you know, where the bodies are buried and where the shoe is squeezing. What were the factors that led to this very interesting decision to shut down the website, even if it was only for a day?
The media industry right now in South Africa finds itself in a very difficult market or environment. So for people who don't know how media is funded, it is largely funded through two ways. One is what we call advertising revenue. So companies would take out ads in a newspaper or an online website and pay for it. And that model of funding media is really tough, because a lot of companies are facing financial problems due to a tough economy. So their spending on advertising has reduced substantially over the past 5 years or so. And the second way would be to charge the public for accessing media or content. And a lot of the readers or viewers or listeners would see media houses putting up a paywall, so you can't read an article, for example, unless you are subscribed to that particular media organization. We at Daily Maverick don't believe in having a paywall. We believe in having our content accessible for free and widely by the public, because we find it quite pernicious to charge people for accessing content and then being informed and aware about what's going on around them. So because of those two funding models, those two funding models are in a tough space at the moment and are creating a crisis when it comes to the financial sustainability of media. And just with the shutdown that we implemented on the 15th of April, we want to remind people and highlight how journalism is in a crisis right now in South Africa and around the world as well. And this is just not about Daily Maverick alone.
Absolutely, no. And I think that's also a very important point. I mean, at the same time, I also don't want to make you, you know, the poster child for every media and journalism outlet, you know, in South Africa or in the world. But this is an issue that has faced media, and it's been going and you know, bubbling away in the background for many years. I mean, I remember sitting in many sort of strat sessions and conversations in the media space, having exactly this conversation. And the business models that you've outlined have been traditional business models for many, many years. And this worked particularly well when there were 5 newspapers, 3 radio stations, and a television channel that you could switch on once in a while. Now, as the world has evolved with social media, with so many different platforms, this model has almost flown out the window. I mean, I know paywalls have been tried internationally, locally, in all kinds of different ways, and it hasn't really replaced the revenue that has been lost in the entire process. I mean, Ray, many people might argue, well, if that isn't working for you, why don't you just change the business model? Why don't you look at your operational costs, etc., which is a conversation I would have probably had if I was chatting to any other media outlet. But I feel like, though, that the Daily Maverick had already gone down that road and had already looked at exactly that issue and had already re-engineered a lot of that business model. So that's why I was quite surprised to hear when you raised the flag on this.
To your point about social media, I love social media, Alex. I love how it has democratized and liberalized engagements and access to media. A lot of people can become a journalist through social media and use of their phones. But what we're facing right now, you know, Alex, is mis- and disinformation. So a lot of fake news makes its way to social media. And it's an election year this year, and we're already seeing a lot of mis- and disinformation happening on social media. Quality and good journalism takes time to produce. It takes money to produce. And I think a Daily Maverick, yes, we are not immune to market challenges and financial challenges, but I think we are doing better because we are growing, and we haven't really retrenched any staff member going against what has happened in the broader industry. I mean, since COVID times, COVID pandemic times, you know, we've lost about 70% of journalists in the media industry. And yes, you can argue and say, why isn't Daily Maverick reinventing itself? Why isn't Daily Maverick charging consumers to access the content? Well, you know, we believe in a free press. That is something that is enshrined in the Constitution. We believe in having a public that is informed. We don't like paywalls. What we prefer is a membership model, Alex, whereby we decide on the public. Let them decide on how much to donate. We've got people who donate 20 rand, 10 rand.
Yeah. I mean, it's as I said, a very interesting conversation that we're having. It's Ray Matlaka. He's a journalist with the Daily Maverick. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to pick up on this conversation right after this.
From Greater Sandton to the rest of the world, this is the Sandton Times Hour. Online. On air.
Anywhere. Anytime.
This is the Sandton Times Hour.
I'm in conversation with Ray Matlaka. He's a journalist with the Daily Maverick. We're chatting about the shutdown that the Daily Maverick did on the 15th of April, where they took their website offline from being online, to highlight some of the challenges and issues that journalism is facing, specifically in a year where there are some very critical events taking place, especially the elections, which are one of the things that are coming to mind, where information and the quality of information across all media comes into sharp focus, because as we know, there'll be WhatsApp groups and social media accounts that'll be spreading all kinds of false narratives and all kinds of questionable information, and suddenly we have to turn to credible news sources to try and make sure that what we know or what we believe is in fact the case. And Ray, we started chatting about sort of the current issues facing media. I know that there's also an inquiry taking place I think it's the Competition Commission or one of the commissions, looking into how media and platforms like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and so on interface. Google is also one of them, Google News, where a lot of traditional media owners are arguing the point that, yes, we're turning out this news, we're having to fund the journalists, we're having to, you know, drive to Tamboerskloof and make sure that, you know, the facts are what they are. And then these platforms sort of just repopulate it, and all the advertising revenue is going their way. And what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah. So as Daily Maverick, we were invited by the Competition Commission to make submissions in the ongoing market inquiry. And the central argument here is that, yes, we believe in social media and the emergence of social media and how it has democratized media access and engagements as well with critical news development and country-specific developments. We believe in those fundamentals. But what it has meant is that news that is produced over time, that is, you know, that money has gone into producing, that news and content has been lifted by these social media platforms, often without attribution, by the way, to the original producer of content. Now that is on its own is an ethical problem because it brings up issues of plagiarism, not attributing the original producer. That on its own creates a lot of problems. And also advertisers are also funding these platforms. So money that could have gone to supporting the original producer of content to allow them to produce further good work, that money is being diverted away from those producers. So we're not saying feel sorry for us. We're not asking for special treatment here, Alex, at all.
Yeah.
But what we're saying is, you know, support the original producers of good journalism. If money is going to be spent, at least support it to credible media outlets. Because let's face it, in South Africa, there are less than 20 credible media groups that are supporting a population of 62 million. Now, that is a big ask. Internationally, we're talking about over 3,000 credible media groups. So less than 20 versus over 3,000 media groups, you can see that the scale is tilted negatively towards South Africa.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've always been an advocate of, I think, the work that outlets like the Daily Maverick do. I mean, there's also a couple of other ones in South Africa where it is hardcore investigative journalism. It is general news. It is the kind of news and the kind of content that I think if you play in the space, and many people might not realize this, is very labor and resource intensive. I mean, if there's a court case, if there's some sort of process that is happening, you're going to have to send somebody there and they have to be there 12 hours a day, day in and day out, weekends, etc. They might have to drive to the other side of Pretoria or the other side of Cape Town to go and cover the story. And that's where it becomes very expensive and very involved. But I mean, that's really what it is. And I mean, we only realize the value of that information once it really hits headlines and we start seeing big boulders being moved, be it somebody ends up appearing in front of court or legislation gets changed or something gets exposed that's in the national interest.
You're absolutely right, Alex. And Daily Maverick, by the way, would be considered as mainstream media. But I really want to pay tribute to other media houses, local or community newspapers, who also, it takes money to be able to produce content. You know, many of the local and community newspapers are plugged into their communities. They know the communities very well. And, you know, think about it. If a particular community doesn't have water or electricity for days or weeks on end, a journalist will get on the road, will get into a car, drive around. Driving takes what? Petrol. It takes time as well, too. That funding model of media and journalists is not only unique to mainstream media, but it is also the lifeblood as well of community and local newspapers. So the same principles still apply here. And what we're asking for is, again, we're not asking for special treatment. We're not asking for us to be treated with kid gloves. But we want to create awareness about if we don't have a sustainable media industry, then this country will not survive. There's been moments where this country has been near collapse. And think about it, how media organizations have really stepped in to save this country from collapse. And a vibrant and free press, it is a central pillar of democracy. As I said, we're going into an election next month in May. we as Daily Maverick would love to grow and to be able to service many parts of the country that are often forgotten. I think about small towns whose stories matter, but we aren't able to reach those towns because we have financial limitations. Mm. Imagine if we did get that kind of financial support. That would really be a game changer in us being able to reach the length and breadth of the country.
Well, it's certainly an interesting conversation, and it certainly warrants a thought as media evolves and also the business models need to evolve. It's been great chatting to Ray Matlaka. He's a journalist with the Daily Maverick who recently decided to call it all quits for a day and just show what it takes and what happens when media switches off. Ray, it's been great chatting to you. It's the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a quick musical break and more of the Santon Times Hour right after this.
For more,
the Santon Times Hour continues.
You're listening to the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8, and welcome to the second half. I'm Alexander Leibner, and that was Thievery Corporation with Lebanese Blonde. If you caught something exciting, interesting, or intriguing on the show this week, but you missed all the details, well, don't despair. You can hop onto www.santontimes.co.za and get all the information there, because there's always a lot of information on this hour. And often it's very difficult to get the dates, the times, the email addresses, or any other kind of details. So we put it all up on the website during the course of the week. And you can go on there at your own time and get all that information and not have to scramble to try and jot it down somewhere. If it's on your phone or a post-it note or one of those things. Also, you can connect with the Santon Times on social media. So whatever platform you're on, you can get us there on TikTok, X, Facebook. What else have we still got? Is there anything else? There's plenty of platforms. Anyway, just type in Santon Times. You'll find it and make sure you connect there and also engage. And it's always wonderful to hear from you. As we get into the second half, I'm thrilled to be chatting about a new theatre performance that's coming to Theatre on the Square on Nelson Mandela Square. It's called King George. It kicks off this week and runs until the 4th of May 2024. And here to chat to me about this is award-winning and multi-nominated writer, actor and producer who also won a Fleur de Cap Award this year for Best Actor in a Leading Role for his role as George Megalos in King George. And that's the play we're talking about. It's King George, and I'm joined by Brent Palmer. Brent, good to chat to you.
Hi, Alexander. Good to chat to you too.
Well, Brent, exciting times ahead as the show comes to Santon. And maybe let's kick off things with asking you, what inspired you to create King George? What's the main plot of the play?
Alexander, so I started writing a short film. I got some funding to make a short film, and we shot the short film. And the protagonist is this George Megalos character, and he's the owner of a sort of an adult strip dance club. He's in some ways, I suppose, quite a gritty, dark, sort of a taboo character. To be quite honest, I was inspired when having first listened to an interview with Lolly Jackson many years ago, and I just thought that there was a certain quality to how this character communicated, and there was a fearlessness within him that I was quite enamored by. You know, he wasn't scared of the shadow aspect of him, and that's just what George is. You know, George is in some ways an unsettling and dodgy kind of character. But he's also got a heart of gold. And I fell in love with this idea of a man who was sort of crusty on the outside, but on the inside, there was something golden, you know. After I wrote the short film, I decided that I would write a stage play for this character. And it's, you know, it's worked well for us thus far.
Well, it certainly sounds like it. I mean, if it's award-winning, I mean, that's really a good start to any sort of performance, and I'm sure that'll also get people very interested in it. But what is sort of the main confrontation that takes place in this play, and how does that sort of evolve without giving us too much information?
I think the plot is quite straightforward and quite simple. It really is about this George character that confronts this developer character one evening in his office. You know, George arrives there with an eviction notice in hand. He slams the eviction notice down on the table and he says, "We're not moving." And so starts this exhilarating drama between these two men. Shane, this CEO of this property developer company, is an alpha male. He's strong. He's a high status. He doesn't take no for answers. He gets what he wants. And then we have this George character who runs his strip club, who's also quite sort of willful and hard-nosed. So really there's this confrontation between these two men who come together in this confined space on an evening. One says, I'm not leaving, and the other says, yes, you are. These two characters from two very different parts of the South African landscape sort of collide one evening. And I think that's the sort of the real crackling exhilaration and conflict wherein we find comedy and there's darkness and there's, you know, there's like threat between these two men as well. So Alexander, sort of at the very heart of it, it's that. And of course, within that, there's sort of hidden plot and things that happens that we think one thing is happening as the drama plays out, but at the end there's a bit of a sort of a reveal, and we find out, oh wow, so what we thought we were watching is perhaps not it. And I won't go into too much about that, but I think that there's real heart within this piece, and I think it's a real experience, you know. And it has some sort of resonance and relevance for people because, you know, some of the themes that are dealt with is, you know, things around sort of property, ownership, where one belongs, gentrification, people being moved out from where they live. So, you know, all of those threads and those themes are woven into this story.
Do you find it easier or is it difficult to play a part that you've also been very much a part of writing?
There is some complexity in writing and playing as well, and I think at the beginning stages I was on the lookout for somebody to play the character, but I think it just evolved that I wrote it and I played as well. And I think if anything, some of the potential sticky points comes through on the rehearsal floor when sort of rehearsing as the actor, rehearsing the character, and then sometimes I'll then be commenting on the writing and perhaps we should fix this or change that. And very often then the director and the other actor say, you know, dude, just leave the writing alone. Let's just leave the writing as it is. It's fine. Let's just figure out what you're doing as an actor. So those are perhaps some of the more complex moments. But for the greater part, there's just been flow with it. And
Do you find that you have to sort of go into sort of more real life research when you start bringing these sort of characters to life and without sort of completely exposing all your tricks and of the trade? Does it also involve having to sort of almost like submerge yourself in the environment that a lot of these characters have to sort of operate in?
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, we did visit one of the clubs, myself and the director of the film, who's a lovely director, Ari Kruger. He's been involved with wonderful projects around the country, film projects, Cezelle, DIY, and Tully's Wedding. And so he came on and he brought this wonderful comedic sort of element to the short film. And then we decided we would go to visit one of the clubs. And we watched some of the dancers work, and we met some of the people like the doorman and the security people and the owner of the club. And in those moments, just in that sort of 1 hour that we spent, that we got to meet the owner and we got to meet his manageress, just there was so much information that we got from those brief encounters that we had, that you get such a lot of inspiration, because in many of these spaces that one regards as, you know, somehow there's a taboo attached to it, and you know, even going there to visit to do some research, there's a certain element to it, sort of not being part of the mainstream, and what are we doing here? But you get to the point that these are just these are people doing a job, and they're making a living, and it's a livelihood, and what we sort of regard as perhaps oh wow, something other, and you know, we go there on those special occasions. It's a total livelihood for some people, and within that, there's so much inspiration. I don't know what it is. So for me, playing the character, and when I get to look at Lolly Jackson, or I watch the mannerisms and the behavior of the owner of this club that we went to, I just walk away with there's an authenticity. And a sort of, there's no ambiguity to how they communicate. This is the work I do. This is what I want. I make money through this business, and that's it. And that gave me so much freedom in playing George, because there's no other way that he does what he does, and that is it. And that adds to the tension and the conflict in our play.
Well, there you have it. Brent Palmer, he is a writer, actor, and producer, and coming up to Sandton with King George this week, Theatre on the Square on Nelson Mandela Square, and that runs till 4th of May, but I encourage you to go get your tickets at CompuTicket, also available at the theatre box office as well, and also, of course, we'll put all the details up on the Sandton Times website, so you can pop on there and read some more and get some more information. It's been great having you on the Sandton Times Hour, Brent. We're going to take a quick musical break, and we're going to wrap up the hour right after this.
It's a good question because lots of people have asked us that. You know, what are you going to do going forward?
That's a great question.
Two critically important questions.
Such a great and interesting question.
I have not even thought about that until you've just said it.
You're listening to the Sandton Times Hour.
That's right, you're listening to the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and also available on all good digital audio platforms. And that was David Guetta and One Republic with I Don't Wanna Wait. Don't know what you don't want to wait for, but they don't. They don't want to wait for anything, really. And I can't wait for my next interview as we almost wrap up at the hour for this week. As you might know, of late, the 11th annual Savannah Comics Choice Comedy Awards took place, and it's an award as grand and as long as the name itself. And there were a whole bunch of well-known, funny winners. It's probably the most laughable event that happens the entire year, but all in good spirit. There were a couple of well-known names. If I looked at some of the winners, Hall of Fame Award went to Mark Lottering. Kagiso Lediga, he won Best Comedic Writer Award. Then Costa, and I'm going to try and pronounce his surname and butcher it completely. I think he's a Greek comedian. Karastavrakis, there we go. Got it. He won the Uplifting Comedic Content Award. And there's a couple more. Robbie Collins, you might know, Headliner of the Year Award. And then obviously Paul Pops, who won Comedian of the Year. But I'm here to chat to the Savannah Newcomer Award winner, Callum Hitchcock. I saw him at the showcase that they had in Sandton at the Theatre on the Square and was not vaguely surprised that Callum had won it because he absolutely killed it that evening, and I'm thrilled to have him on the line. And Callum, congratulations on your newcomer award. I think that's fantastic.
Thank you so much, Alex. Yeah, it was insane to be included in that list of massive names that you just rattled off, especially, you know, the biggest name being Costa.
Yeah.
Well done for rattling that off. That's phenomenal. And Savannah Comics Choice Comedy Awards. I struggled with that all weekend.
Well, let me tell you, I feel like Costa needs to start a career where he just gets known by one name. Callum, if I look at your surname Hitchcock, no relationship to Alfred Hitchcock?
Not as far as I know.
Okay.
Just a coincidence.
So Alfred looked after the horrors and you looked after the laughter.
Yes, that must be the... We're going to go through the family and everyone's going to do a genre at some point.
Fantastic. But let me tell me a little bit more about your career. I mean, you studied politics and economics. Then I think you spent a bit of time raising money for a local football club, and then one day you decided to go into comedy.
I started going to university in Port Elizabeth, and like you say, studying politics, which is the funniest major of all, obviously. And then, I ended up in advertising and spent a lot of time just being the office clown. And eventually in PE, they had an open mic night, and I kind of got forced into doing it with Roland Gaspar, who's a radio colleague of yours. He's at Algoa FM in Port Elizabeth, and he's a comedian. I like to think first and foremost,
yeah.
Despite being a prolific broadcaster. Went to my first open mic night in PE in like end of 2020. Then didn't do comedy for another year, but pretty much bugged Roland Gaspar for every 3 weeks for a year, going, "Hey man, when are we going to do some more comedy? I'd love to do some more of that comedy stuff." And eventually he cracked and went, "Hey, this guy's been bugging me forever. If you organize everything, you can perform." And I was like, "Awesome, that sounds fantastic." And from there, the rest is history. Moved to Cape Town 2 years ago. The scene here has been so welcoming and so great to be able to work material 4, 5, 6 nights a week if I need to. And the headliners are so supportive. The open micers have a real camaraderie amongst them. And I think that really showed at the newcomer showcase. The Cape Town acts all did really well. There were 3 Cape Town acts in the top 5. So a really great open mic scene in Cape Town, and a great place to foster talent.
Well, there was that one that wasn't so great, but we're not going to mention them. No, I'm joking. No, they were actually all fantastic. But listen, you know, I mean, you mentioned this sort of, you know, being funny at the office. I mean, being, you know, office funny and around the braai funny versus holding your own for 5 or 10 minutes on a stage solo with a spotlight and an audience that doesn't know you from a bar of soap. Totally different ballgame.
Yes, very much different gravy. And that was my response anytime anyone was like, you should do stand-up comedy. I was like, everyone thinks they're funny, okay? You've met everyone's father. That's that's your dad at the braai, man. That's, and I've seen, you know, we've all seen our dad bomb at the braai. So I was terrified of being that guy for quite long. And then eventually it got to a point where people were like, no, man, come on. And I could obviously see, I've always loved to make people laugh, obviously. Shocker. I just never thought I was at that level. And now here we are.
Well, I mean, look, we're chatting about one of those moments that most comedians would absolutely relish where, you know, things have worked out your way. You've won this fantastic award. And, you know, in most instances, it might be a night where everybody's laughing in the aisles and underneath their chairs. But tell us about those evenings that you bombed. Those are always the greatest stories, when things didn't play out the way you did and you thought you've probably made the worst decision in your life by even getting onto a stage.
Yeah, it happens to all of us. KG Mukhadi, who's a well-known comic, he presented the award for best solo show. He won it last year. And his catchphrase almost is, comedy will humble you. And it really is true. Like, the week of the awards, actually, I was at a show with Vafa Naragi, who won two of the other awards, and he was hosting, and he introduced me, and he was like, this guy is an award-nominated comedian. He's in the top five. You're going to love him. And then he proceeded to rib the crowd a little bit and say, are any of you the top five for anything? Anyone? Anyone? No. Well, then, you know, give this guy his props. And then I came on stage and proceeded to bomb horribly. Just.
Oh, wow.
So no matter how high you're feeling at any point, comedy is ready to humble you around the corner. And yeah, there are times where you know, on your way home from a gig in Stellenbosch at, you know, 5 to midnight, and you're thinking, why did I make the trip out here, and why did I make land reform jokes in Stellenbosch? This was a terrible decision. But it's part of the gig, and I think you learn more from bombing than you do from killing.
Yeah. No, listen, absolutely. I mean, yeah. I totally empathize with that, because, I mean, I've also never shied away from an open mic. And when we used to have some really prolific comedy clubs in Johannesburg, I'm thinking of Parker's, I'm thinking of, well, Cool Runnings, sort of a bit of a borderline case.
Yes, but, I've heard of Cool Runnings.
I mean, you know, I took to the stage and did a couple of sets, and some of them were great and some of them were complete disasters. And that's kind of what you have to take and just pick it up and carry on. And sometimes you have to say, you know, it's just the audience that wasn't having a good night, not me, and in complete denial. But what I enjoyed about your particular set as well, when I saw it at Nelson Mandela Square, was that you also have this great crossover. And I don't know if it's necessarily also the earth from which you were born, which is the Eastern Cape, there in Gqeberha. It somehow just lends itself to having this sort of very multicultural, very multi-South African flavor. I'm assuming you're drawing from a lot of personal experience as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think that growing up in the Eastern Cape is a massive advantage. It really is a multicultural space. I think we've done a good job. You know, there are still some of those traditional boys' schools, the, you know, the equivalents of the Bishops and the St. Stithians, etc., in an Eastern Cape context, but they've done a great job of integrating. Yeah, I did have a multicultural upbringing, and that really has shaped my comedy. If I think about it, there's guys I went to school with who I thought all through high school were like way funnier than me. If you'd asked me when I was 15, like, who do you think would be a comedian in your year? It never would have been me. It would have been guys like, I won't embarrass them by naming them, but yeah, guys I went to school with who were way funnier.
Because they'll be performing tomorrow night, and then it'll just bomb, and then it'll be the whole thing all over again. But Callum, listen, what do you do with this title now? I mean, it's all good winning an award, and I'm sure they've given you some, you know, a six pack of Savannahs and a bit of geld, and you can go do something with it. But how do you build on this now?
Oh, look, I mean, you know, it is the newcomer award, so I am still figuring it out, I guess. But I said to a few people, you know, the work starts now. Obviously, I'm going to try leverage it as much as I can. I'd love to become a working comedian, you know, and be doing that full time. That really is the dream, which I know is very difficult in South Africa, but I'd like to be doing that or, you know, comedy adjacent things full time. And yeah, it's fortunately, I am no stranger to the hard work that goes into comedy. I felt so grateful to be able to do comedy 3-4 nights a week and started running a few of my own gigs as well. I think it's about just keeping on doing the work and leaning on the experienced people on the scene that we have here. So yeah, I think really it's just recognition. The work was never going to stop. Maybe it'll, you know, be able to get me into rooms that I previously wouldn't have been able to get into. But yeah, really the hard work starts now. It's great motivation to do more hard work is to be recognized. Hopefully getting a few more bookings, doing some ads, things like that. But yeah, it really is the start in my mind.
Fantastic. Well, Callum Hitchcock, he's the Savannah Newcomer Award winner, and hopefully he's coming to a town near you with some of his stuff. And if you haven't seen him, I highly encourage you to make a plan to go and see him whenever he does appear again. And Callum, once again, congratulations on your fantastic award.
Thanks so much, Alex.
Awesome. Okay, I think that's all we have time for this week on the Santon Times Hour as I look at the clock on Mix 93.8. And as always, it's available on all good podcast platforms. So whatever, choose your one, Apple, Amazon, Spotify, AfriPods, Iona. I see we're on that now as well, which is quite interesting. Jollof Radio, I think that's a West African podcast platform. And if you want to get in touch, you can email editor at santontimes.co.za, connect on social media at Santon Times, and also the website www.santontimes.co.za, and feel free to send through your questions and your comments. And thank you to all the guests who made time to be on the show this week, and of course Vincenzo, mille grazie for mixing it all up again this week behind the desk, and of course the Santon Times team, as well as everyone at Mix 93.8, a very dedicated and committed team behind the scenes making this all happen, and a special shout out to Kyle, who always makes sure that I'm on air at the right time, in the right place, and all the bits and pieces fit together. So Kyle, thanks so much. Let's wrap up the show this week, and that's to play out with Jennifer Hudson and Spotlight. Thank you for listening. And let's do it again next week.